Okay, hello, welcome everybody. Welcome to how every little decision can bring you closer to or further away from creating crap. Some of you will have art in your program as well. On the one side we have crap, on the other side we have art. So we're trying to figure out how we can avoid one and attract towards the other. In the session today we have a great selection of panelists. Floyd Mueller, David May, and Luke was not able to, he had to change his flight at the last minute, but luckily we have Tom Killen, who's basically stepped up to take over. So what we're going to be talking about today, just quickly, is some of the design decisions and process decisions that you can face when actually creating a game and how that can actually impact the end result. We'll be covering different types of games, so alternate reality games, console games, mobile games, as well as exertion games. And please feel free to offer your own views also via Twitter on some things that you've, you know, some tips and that you've had. The hashtag is FreePlay11, as you may know. We haven't got much time, so we might as well jump straight into it. And I'll welcome Floyd first, who's the head of the exertion games lab at RMIT, and he'll be telling you more about what he does there. So welcome, Floyd.
We bring our own name tags. So.
Yes.
So hello everyone, welcome. I'm Floyd Mueller. I direct the Exertion Games Lab, as you heard, here at RMIT. And I want to talk a little bit about the little decisions.
You hear me right?
Right. In the prototype design process, so very early on. Let me quickly show you a couple of games that we design at the Exertion Games Lab. One is a remote shadow boxing experience where you physically shadow box a remote participant. We do things such as the projects with the Hard Rock Place, about 200 meters down the road, where we're rock climbers, so it's a rock climbing place, where we project virtual rocks falling down, so the rock climber has to swing out of the way and gets to communicate with the belayer below in order to understand how games change how we do sports. We also have games such as Bubble Popper, where our bodies interact with each other in novel ways. For example, you can push the other player out of the way to get and pop your bubble, or you can play collaboratively and lift the other player up to get bubbles that are further up high that you can't reach on your own. So these games, as you see, involve the body in a rather unusual way, and that's pretty much what we are doing at Exertion Games. We believe that the body is going to play a much more heightened role in the way we play, and that this kind of play is going to be much more ubiquitous in society and culture. We see it basically at the intersection of play, technology, and the active human body. That's where we are situated. As I said, we're just around the corner, so if you go outside, turn right, or you can just go through there and then on the right. Unlike what Google says, we're right there, and we're here right now. So please come by and visit us. We're always happy to have visitors and show people around. We do research through design. That means we're not just talking about these games, we actively design them. Because we believe through the design process, we actually get to understand games better, and therefore what makes people play, why we play, and what makes play so exciting. And because we do research through design, we sometimes even build like large steel structures to support our exertion games. And that involves a lot of decisions, right? We make a lot of decisions in that design process. And some of these seemingly small decisions in the beginning have a large impact at the end. And I'll give you one example. We did jogging over distance, which is a kind of game for joggers. Which plays with the idea that you can have a distributed jogging experience. So this is for joggers that used to jog together in Melbourne, but now one of them lives in London. And we built this jogging support system with a microphone and a headset. I'll show you a little video first.
Hi, and welcome to Jogging Over a Distance. Jogging Over a Distance allows joggers in different locations to jog together. They can profit from similar benefits as in jogging side by side, such as social interaction, motivational support, and increased fitness. we use specialized sound delivered over headphones to convey a sense of how fast your partner is running, similar to jogging side by side. If you're running faster than your partner, she or he hears your voice coming from the front. And if your partner is speeding up, you can hear your partner coming because the sound comes closer, eventually overtaking you. We measure both joggers' speed and wirelessly transmit it to a spatialization algorithm that positions the sound on a virtual 2D plane around the jogger's head. Jogging over a distance is not meant to replace jogging side by side.
So let me just stop here, because let me explain what we actually did originally. So originally we thought we measured people's GPS data in order to determine the speed, and based on the speed we spatialize the audio, right? And you couldn't quite hear, but the idea was through the speakers here, we demonstrated that the sound travels through the headphones in this 3D audio space around your head. So if the other person is putting more effort in, is ahead, then the sound is really soft, right? So you have to speed up. The sound gets louder, 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 until it's right next to you. But if you then put too much effort in, the other person's sound travels to the back. Softer, softer, softer. So the other person has to speed up. Right? So that was pretty much the idea with that spatialization. The problem we had was that the GPS just didn't work. It wasn't accurate enough. It dropped out, it wasn't updating often enough. And then we made this decision, seemingly small decision, where we thought we're going to use heart rate monitors. And we use people's heart rate to inform the spatialization. And that, especially by our experts, participants, changed the experience for them dramatically. It was a completely new thing, because it enabled us to not only look at the heart rate in absolute terms, but we looked at the heart rate in terms of their target heart rate. So we asked them beforehand what was the target heart rate at which they would like to run at. And based on that, we basically leveled them to 100% at which they started off with. So this way, a marathon runner and a beginner runner all of a sudden could run together because they both started 100%. So if both of them put 10% more effort in, they were still side by side and they could still hear each other nice. And that was what changed the experience. And that was what the participants applauded dramatically, because they said things such as, I never really enjoyed jogging with my sister as much because I was always behind, right? I was born puffing. I couldn't really talk and I had to tell her to like slow down, and then she had to wait for me, so I felt guilty because she couldn't get her exercise out of it. But now all of a sudden we could run together in an equal way, right? And they were so excited about it. And it enabled them to actually see the distance between Melbourne and London, not just as a problem that the technology tried to fix, right? This is what we tried initially. We tried to fix the distance between them. But now all of a sudden they appreciated the distance between them, because it allowed them to do something that they couldn't do if they would have been here together in Princess Park, that is running equally together. They needed the distance to have that. So that small little decision made this big impact on their experience. Another example, not from me, but before I came to Melbourne, I was at Stanford University, and my colleague there, Stephen Dow, did this wonderful experiment where he tried to figure out how decisions influence the prototyping process and therefore the outcome. And he had this wonderful experiment where he gave people the task to drop an egg from the second floor of the building onto the concrete. And the goal was to not break the egg. So they could build some kind of structure around it, like a parachute, and put the egg in here. Other people build like a shell. Other people build some kind of bouncing thing so it would bounce. So the goal was to build something that would allow the egg not to break, right? And he put them in two groups. So everyone was working individually, but he had like two set of instructions. And he told these people here, you build three prototypes, and you build one. And in the end, he told these people, you pick one, and we're going to drop that one. And we dismiss the other two prototypes. And here we're going to use, obviously, the one that you built. And then we're going to see who performs better. So on the one hand, you might say, OK, these people with the three prototypes, of course, we all know like more prototypes are better. Therefore, these people should perform better, right? But he gave them a really strict time limit. So you might say that the people with the one prototype had more time to actually refine their system, and therefore they should perform better. So who would think that the people with the three prototypes perform better? Show of hands there. What is that, like 1/4? So, and everybody else puts their hand up if they think the people with the one prototype perform better. So that's half. So 1/4 is undecided. or equal, right? A draw. So what happened was the people with the multiple prototypes performed better. So if you thought these people go well done. This is what kind of the literature also suggests. But there was another interesting thing happening, which is that the people who built three prototypes, they all had the chance to actually get feedback halfway through from design professors. And it turned out that the people who built one prototype, they didn't really take the suggestions from the design professors on. They actually thought they were kind of arrogant and a waste of time towards their design. They said they rather want to design rather than get the feedback. Versus these people here were much more open to the suggestions and actually incorporated them in the design. And if you see it from the perspective of here, a professor has a chance to say, I don't quite like your design. Versus here, he can say, I don't quite like your design, but this one is better. Right? All of a sudden, you as the designer are much more open to criticism, to feedback, because people can weigh options and you can weigh options. Right? So that's number one. That's why multiple designs are better in the decision making for the decision making process. Number two, the other thing what happened was that the people who built multiple designs, they were much more, even late in the design process, much more open to quickly iterate and change dramatically their design in order to get a better performance. Because they had multiple designs to draw from and change things around. Versus these people very much stuck on the original idea and didn't change it a lot. And there's this wonderful example video of this one guy, you can find it on YouTube, where he basically, he's asked to comment on his design process, right? And he starts off it in the beginning, and he did this parachute thing with, I've got this idea of a parachute, right? And then he builds a bit. And then they ask him later, and he goes, oh yeah, the parachute idea, I think that's gonna work. And then a little bit later, he's still building this parachute. I think the parachute, yeah, that's a good idea, yeah. And then towards the end, he goes, clearly, the parachute idea is the best approach towards this problem. Right? And he hadn't even dropped the egg at that point. And fair enough, he dropped the egg and the parachute didn't work. And he failed. So multiple prototypes are better. And what does it mean for the Exertion Games Lab? Well, that means that we build a lot of prototypes. Our mantra is fail and fail often. Students don't build one big project over the semester, for example. We do a lot of projects very rapidly. And the last example that's going to show is hanging off a bar, which plays kind of like a hero hanging off a wild river kind of an idea, and that was built in 1 week.
Hi. Have you ever seen one of those movies where the action hero hangs on a cliff, seemingly forever at ease? But it's actually quite hard to hang onto things, we found. And therefore we developed this game around the idea of hanging off a bar. In order not to drown on the wide river below you. Luckily, from time to time, there's a set of log or a raft coming by, on which you can jump in order to recover. But not for too long, because the raft is going to disappear behind you into the waterfall, so you have to hang onto the bar again. The longer you hang onto this, the larger the time between the individual logs. And if you hang on really long, you will also see that the raft thrives slower, and they also get shorter, so you've got less time to recover. Unlike other games that focus on movement by inflating the arms, with this game we aim to inspire other researchers in this.
Now you can see why I had to be in the video, because I'm obviously not good at that one. It's the fastest game, I often say, right? For me, it's over after 20 seconds. If you, we are actually actively looking for very smart people who want to do a PhD on exertion games. So, particularly with industry experience. So if you're interested, talk to me after the session and go to this URL. And that's my view on how decisions influence the design process. Thank you very much.